is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Ukraine conflict. The headlines from London. Ukraine-Russia war. Ukraine bolsters defenses in last-ditch attempt to hold Bakhmut. I welcome Katrina Vandenhoven, the editorial director and publisher of The Nation magazine, who has traveled much in Russia over the years and observes this conflict from the point of view of where's diplomacy. We've had several conversations about this over the last month. Katrina's written about it in a column. But now, suddenly, there looks to be evidence of diplomacy. Katrina, since last we spoke, the Secretary of State, Mr. Blinken, at the New Delhi meeting of the G20 ministers, stopped, we're told, for an unscheduled, unpredicted conversation with Sergei Lavrov, the very well-spoken foreign minister of Russia. We're told they spoke about New START, about an American being held in Moscow, and about the Ukraine conflict in some fashion. Does that look like diplomacy to you? And I add, there is a report that in New Delhi, there was conversation between the national security apparatus of Prime Minister Modi and Moscow. There is another report that's in the news now out of Reuters that Lula da Silva of Brazil, the newly elected and former president of Brazil, is offering his services to arbitrate, to negotiate a ceasefire, a peace between Ukraine and Russia. Now, Modi and Lula da Silva are major players in the BRICS organization. Does this all add up to something moving towards diplomacy? What are your instincts? Good evening to you, Katrina.
Thank you, John. Much attention, of course, is paid to the intense street fighting in and around the eastern Ukrainian city of Bakhmut. But I think what we're witnessing, John, is critically important. The Ukraine conflict has catalyzed a reemergence of what was called the non-aligned movement. Non-aligned movement kind of disappeared in the post-Cold War geopolitics, but we're witnessing those, you could say BRICS, but very key members of the non-aligned movement, India, Brazil, playing a diplomatic role. As you mentioned, Putin met with the Prime Minister Modi's national security aide on the outskirts of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization meeting a few days ago or a few weeks ago. It was an hour-long meeting, and he's the second Indian national security advisor to have had an individual meeting with the Russian president. And I think India is trying to navigate, while it has no direct stake in the Russia-Ukraine conflict, is treading ground, a middle ground, between its partnerships long time with Russia and the U.S., seeking a more prominent global role as a voice of the global South. A few days ago on Democracy Now!, Amorim, the foreign advisor to Brazilian President Lula, talked about Brazil playing a key role in peace talks to end the war. And as you know, John, Lula recently met with Biden, President Biden, who's unsuccessfully pushed Brazil to send weapons to Ukraine. And Lula said, you know, he told Biden, I don't want to join the war. I want to end the war. So I think we are seeing and we're witnessing a reemergence of global South powers. Global South countries have been impacted brutally by this war. So I think there are many ways we can measure the wider consequences of the conflict with this kind of resurgence of national aligned NAM, a non-aligned movement, and diplomacy.
You're a columnist for the Washington Post. You move between Washington and New York. You're extremely well informed. I'm puzzled where the peace part of the Democratic Party is these days, knowing that this war cannot come to a conclusion, knowing that both sides are exhausting themselves and losing lots and lots of human beings to the grinder in the Donbass, knowing that the only thing harder than starting a war is ending a war.
Is ending a war, yeah. No, I mean, I think what we're going to see in the next couple weeks is a Democratic Party. Again, much of the party did not oppose the Iraq War, which we are coming on the 20th anniversary of the launch of. The Democratic Party, the Progressive Caucus, which put forward a letter in October seeking diplomacy with Ukraine, supporting President Biden's minimal diplomacy, retracted that letter, pulled it back because of mismanagement of how it was released. It did put forward on the first anniversary of the Ukraine war a letter again seeking diplomacy. But you are absolutely right that there are no real voices. There's no real leadership, as there might be, to end the war. This is in what's striking is endless war in Ukraine is damaging to our national and global security. It's also damaging to a country. Of course, one has to protect the freedom, sovereignty of Ukraine, find ways to do that. But the country's ravaged, and it's going to be dependent on Western funding. And we're already seeing oligarchical money flowing in, both U.S., Russian, Ukrainian, and others, which it's not clear will serve the people of Ukraine and may increase corruption, which has been one of its main problems.
I want to connect this to the Global South. The Global South is at risk, especially because of the shifting climate around the world. The migration stories that are everywhere, the Mediterranean basin, the Turkish-Greek border, certainly even the Belarus-Polish border, and we know it's Central America, all that is a symptom of climate change and people moving towards better outcomes for their lives. The Global South has strength because it has a motive. Is it being listened to, Katrina?
It's going to make itself listened to. I mean, I think, Europe is consumed between old and new Europe and NATO and this war, the Global South is making its way to some form of independence. I do think one piece of, diplomacy, John, was the grain issue. And yes, that is now being tested, which is unfortunate because that's where the UN came in and was of value to the Global South, which is being stressed with hunger and security and economic environmental insecurity. But I do think the Global South, these are middle powers, but important powers flanked by China and, South Africa. They are looking for financial stability, for climate assistance, and they're going to seek it where they can. And I think that even though media reports, U.S. media reports, made much of Blinken's first encounter with Lavrov, and we hope more was said than was reported, it's not clear if the non-Western members will not find their own way.
This is going to scar a generation. Already has.
And I mean, scars.
We'll be 50 years recovering from this. Certainly the leadership in NATO recognizes this, that a few yards or a few kilometers on a battlefield is not adequate to pay back the mothers who don't have sons for 2050.
Ukraine's resistance has rightly captured our attention, sympathy, but it is going to be reliant on funding, Western funding, other funding, to revive and survive. This, and so I think the sooner there can be a peace that is as real a peace as is possible, Ukraine's basic infrastructure, which has been damaged or demolished, if this destruction continues, Ukraine's economy is already projected to contract by nearly half this year. So I think there has to be some focus on beyond. A generation has been scarred, war scars, but will another generation be scarred? I think it's critical that these peace attempts, ending war attempts, are coming from these countries. And maybe we'll give cover, but the United States will have to step up at some point. It has failed, as you know. I mean, it kind of impeded Minsk. It ignored some overtures regarding NATO, but now it's going to have to listen to other parts of the world, which are seeking not support of a Russian war so cruel and unjust, but end the war. And that means not sending more weapons, but sending assistance to live and rebuild.
Katrina Vandenhoevel, the editorial director and publisher of The Nation magazine, a columnist in The Washington Post. I'm John Battle.